As journalist I.F. Stone has written, in a country so passionate about law and order, it should not be necessary to remark that falsification of evidence is a crime, and agreement to do so in concert with others is conspiracy to obstruct justice. Were students to shoot down National Guardsmen or other law officers, and were the FBI then to turn up evidence that those who did the shooting agreed among themselves to tell investigators a fabricated story, it is hard to believe the news would be relegated to the back pages and met with indifference. This, albeit in reverse, is what happened in the Jackson State and Kent State killings. In both cases, the FBI and other government agencies have turned up evidence that the guardsmen and police who did the shootings also agreed among themselves to tell FBI investigators a false story. In Mississippi, the Jackson police lied to both the mayor and the FBI when they denied that they fired at Jackson State. The police replaced their ammunition after the shootings to fool the mayor when he inspected their guns, and together with members of the highway patrol, they disposed of the shell casings to prevent their use as ballistics evidence. In Ohio, one guardsman told reporters for the night newspapers that he had fired indiscriminately into the crowd at Kent State, and that he had known his life was not in danger. He added, "The guys have been saying that we got to get together and stick to the same story, that it was either our lives or them, a matter of survival. I told them I would tell the truth." It appears that the suspicions of investigators were further aroused when they discovered that 30 of the initial depositions taken from guardsmen used virtually identical phrases in describing their danger from the students, much as in the movie Z. To quote Mr. Stone again, "In an age of instant communication, some news still seems to travel by ox cart. The fabrication of evidence in the Jackson and Kent State killings is an example. Apparently, it does make a difference when the victims are only black and/or students."
I feel in order to put the events at Kent into the proper context, it's necessary to go back a little to 1492, when the first white man came to America. And when the first white man came to America, he was greeted with a shower of arrows. The reason for this being that the only thing he brought with him was venereal disease and domination of a native population. Now, once again sailing out, the white man, more specifically Richard Nixon and his men, sailed out to another foreign country to dominate that, and that being the country of Vietnam. They've dominated that country for many years. Not only were they content with attempting to dominate it, and once again they were met there with a shower of arrows, they also attempted to extend that domination. And on Thursday, April 31st, Richard Nixon announced that he invaded Cambodia. He invaded Cambodia in direct violation of the United States Constitution, as well as any other type of legalistic, things that they have. Because Congress of the United States says that only Congress can declare war. And in fact, Richard Nixon went ahead and declared war by himself. Of course, the American people have many times shown that the mass of them are in opposition to the war in Vietnam. They showed it by voting for Lyndon Johnson, peace candidate, among other things. They showed it by marching in the streets many times. Now, and so in complete opposition to both the American and the Vietnamese people, Richard Nixon went right ahead. And in response to that, the American people once again launched a huge wave of protest in response to the violent policies of Richard Nixon and his henchmen. There was a nationwide student strike, and there were thousands of people in the streets all over the country. At Kent State University, on Friday, May 1st, following his speech, there was a rally in which we buried the Constitution of the United States, for the reason I've already given. Now, following the burial of the Constitution, that night there was some window trashing in downtown Kent. You may wonder what window trashing does. I also wonder what window trashing does, but nonetheless, it took place. And the police used this as an excuse to have cops illegally come on campus and snatch people off and drag them off. There was barrage after barrage after barrage of tear gas. Several people were bayoneted by National Guardsmen. So this is what, these same violent policies were extended onto the campus at Kent State. Now, next night, students who had been driven from out of town by the cops and the National Guard attempted to go downtown where the entertainment is. They were met and driven back, and the ROTC building was burned down. The ROTC building is... The ROTC building is an old, dilapidated wooden building on the center of Commons. It was built in 1943 as a temporary structure. It houses a shooting gallery. And there's a lot of ammunition and things stored inside of it. And all around are hills. And people were sitting on the hills watching the ROTC building burn down. See, there's one very interesting thing that came out of that. See, and that is that the ROTC building is about 200 feet away from the police station, right across the little courtyard. And all these self-styled revolutionaries who were moving the masses by burning down the ROTC building, it took them 45 minutes to get it started. Couldn't get that old wooden building started. And all the time, the police never attempted to stop that. In fact, it was almost as though they wanted them to burn down the ROTC building. It's almost as though they wanted an excuse. Eventually, the ROTC building did get started. There were some flares thrown inside of it, and it was burned down. Now, what they did from that point on, of course, was that they used this, this is an excuse to stop the movement that the mass of students at Kent State University were involved in, that is massive opposition to the war in Vietnam. Now, the next night, once again, there was sporadic fighting. Several people were bayoneted once again. We later found out that a lot of these people who were bayoneted were simply thrown into jail and left there. No one knew about it for several days. Things didn't really begin to happen until Monday, the day of the shootings on May 4th. Students assembled spontaneously in front of the student union at 12 noon. It was a rally that was just spread by word of mouth. There were no leaflets, no organizations were calling or anything like that. But students were so upset with what had been going on campus, in addition to the invasion of Cambodia, that they simply showed up for it. And there were several thousand students who assembled in front of the student union, then marched around to the back of the student union where the commons were, and began to hold a peaceful rally. And a strike was called around, two demands. One was support to the black student demands for a new cultural center. Black students had been given a cultural center that was a rat-infested old house, and no one seemed to feel that was quite adequate. And also against an end to campus complicity with the war machine. Abolishment of ROTC and the Liquid Crystals Institute, which is used for counterinsurgency. Now, people were having a very peaceful rally on the commons, and at one end of the common were all the people. It was a very nice day out. People were sitting in the sun enjoying themselves. And at the other end of the commons were National Guardsmen and State Highway Patrolmen and Portage County policemen and Kent policemen and campus policemen and policemen from all over the state with M1s, grenade launchers, tanks, and a few other assorted things. They really did have tanks there. Now, what then happened was that we were informed that we had no right to assemble. even though this was a very peaceful assembly, of course, we were told that we had no right to assemble peacefully or any other way, legally or any other way. There was no legality. We're simply not allowed to do that. And very quickly, the right to assemble and the right to speech was taken away. Later on in the day, of course, the right to life was taken away for 4 students, and the right to a decent life was taken away from those students who were crippled for life, students who had feet amputated or paralyzed from the waist down, things like that. And what happened was we were standing there, and a Jeep drove up, and a guardsman informed us that we would either disperse or we would be dispersed. And they were greeted with unanimous booing, and a couple rocks were thrown. No one was hit. They returned back to their lines and talked to the big cheese and came out again and once again said the same thing. And then they began lobbing tear gas. And it was a very heavy gassing. It drove people over a hill in back of, right behind the Commons, over a hill which is called Taylor Hill. There's a building on top, Taylor Hall, and onto a wide area behind it, an open area where there's a soccer field and a parking lot and just some lawn space. They were driven over there, and students were pretty well dispersed. There were several thousand students over there. They weren't together. They were spread out over quite an area. The guardsmen ran up the hill in a line with fixed bayonets, padding, masks, the whole bit. Ran up behind students, forcing them over the top of the hill, those stragglers that there were, you know, laying there throwing up and stuff. Now, at this point, of course, everyone figured that the crowd had been dispersed and the guard would return. And they began to. The line of guardsmen turned around, began walking back over the hill. Halfway back, they stopped, turned around, fired a volley of shots into the crowd. Now, a lot of people have attempted to justify this and explain why this happened. First, they attempted to do this by saying there was a sniper fire coming from a commercial building. Then they realized that there were no commercial buildings around. So they said that it was just sniper fire coming from a building. But then they realized that there were no buildings around where there could have been sniper fire coming from. So then they attempted to explain it from the fact that one of the students in the crowd had a pistol, because they found a pistol bullet. But then pictures were shown that showed a guardsman with a pistol. And in fact, they really haven't, you know, come out with anything up to this point. And they've had to stick to the old routine of using rock throwing as an excuse to shoot people down. It's been used before. In fact, it isn't the students who are responsible for any of the violence on the campus. It's Nixon and his policies. The policies of the United States government and the National Guard when they come on campus. And it's not the National Guardsmen who are responsible for the violence either. One of the National Guardsmen had a nervous breakdown. He's in an asylum. One had a heart attack. And, you know, these are kids just like anybody else, and they're not too happy about what they had to do. Now, what happened was not an attack on 4 students or a dozen students. It wasn't simply they came on campus to get rid of these 4 students and to hurt the other students. It was an attack on the anti-war movement. It was an attack on the anti-war movement that happened to have been met very well, because it was met with nationwide demonstrations all over the country. Thousands of people demonstrated against that type of thing. And an attack on the movement is made any time that a movement is feared, any time a movement is growing. For instance, I understand that you have a few problems right here with people coming to meetings and things. This is not done for, you know, because people happen to be, you know, not nice people. You know, it could be better with other people. This is done because they fear masses of people. And because of that, they are forced to attack you. And one thing the movement has done is it has always met these attacks by saying that an attack on one is an attack on all. That anytime anyone is victimized in the movement, or anytime they attempt to stop free speech, or stop the rights that have been won from past struggles, The entire movement has always rallied to defend these rights. They've rallied to defend free speech and freedom of assembly, freedom to travel and petition. The only way you can defend yourself, the only thing we have, is by mobilizing all the public outrage we can against this type of attack. It's the only thing we have. In fact, defense of free speech and the right to organize and the right to hold meetings with whoever you want, inviting the community on campus, is a very real issue. And it's one that has to be fought for, and it's one that has to be defended. You can no more let college administrators, with what seems like a petty attack, hold up a movement any more than you can Nixon and his guns. They both represent the same thing, and that is an attack on the movement, an attack on the anti-war movement, and it's one that can't be tolerated. What people have to do is, sure, continue to build mass mobilizations for an immediate and total withdrawal from Southeast Asia, but every attack must be met head-on by the entire movement in order to ensure the right to continue to organize freely and have free speech. The shootings at Kent, Jackson, Augusta all flow from the same violent policies that have been suffered by the people of Indochina. And much like them, we have to defend ourselves, be it with different tactics for different times. And when they attempt to stop us with unjust laws or rulings like these regents have done here apparently, we must fight those unjust laws.